This is H. Avenger. You're listening to Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit, exclusive production of WhiteRabbitRadio.net. And it's been a long time. Haven't talked to the little white rabbits in quite some time. This is another Follow the White Rabbit. And we have a special guest on. We have Truck Roy. He's an old guest. One of the first guests. One of the last guests. How you doing, Truck?
Good, good. That sounds a little apocalyptic.
A little apocalyptic, yeah. Well, everything looks a little apocalyptic.
Doesn't it?
Follow the White Rabbit 73. I mean, we got the action going on, all this crazy stuff going on across the planet. North Korea, everyone's wondering what's going on there. That's dying down now. Iran, you look around. Actually, the stuff that scares you to death is India-Pakistan stuff, because they actually have nukes pointed at each other, and they're predicted to go off at any moment, too. That's something they don't talk about on American TV a whole lot. But, they're, you know, all over the planet, you got these powder kegs, and, of course, you got the Boston bombing, and all the anti-whites hoping it's a white guy, and all this kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah, you know, I talk politics just about all day at work. And all this last couple of weeks, I've had people coming in talking about Syria. Oh, what do you think of Syria? You're worried about Syria. And my feeling on it was, you know, if you hear a dog barking, he's usually on a chain. Yeah. If a dog's going to bite you, you never hear him coming. And the same thing with North Korea. That's what people have been talking about, North Korea. And I get the feeling that North Korea is a dog on a chain. They're barking so loud that Putin or China or somebody must have them on a chain.
Possibly. The problem is that you see, Kim Jong-il did crazy real well. And this is the big problem for North Korea, is they don't have anything anyone wants. They don't have any oil. They ain't got no Jews. They don't have no Israel. They don't have anything to protect or anything anyone wants. Sooner or later, as of right now, I would say the cost-benefit of war there, and this is what I read on In-Game Exotica for this particular night, the cost-benefit of war there, I would say, I would agree with the Wartart. I was reading from this blog on the show commenting, but the cost-benefit of war there is quite low. The problem is that benefit may change at any given moment with this new Kim Jong-un if he keeps threatening, because there's only so much South Korea can handle if they have a nuclear weapon, and there's only so much China can handle, because guess what? Someone could use that to trip up, this Chinese miracle could be tripped up quite easily with something like that on their doorstep. With just a huge collapse of even North Korea could trip up China, because you'd have the refugee problems. It's a mess. It's a mess, but there's no real benefit to anyone. The problem is, if the cost gets too high of North Korea messing around, for instance, they all of a sudden torpedo some South Korean ship or something like that, some type of miscalculation, that's when it could go up. But the only thing I have heard about it from reliable different elements is that the U.S. was on standby with some type of preemptive strike, because the cost of taking out the South Korean capital, the cost of it to the financial markets or whatever, could be growing quite high. You know what I mean? As far as, in other words, this guy's acted crazy so much that they're actually starting to get concerned that the cost benefit, they might actually have to do something about it.
Well, they've got to take him seriously. He's got a nuke. But I just, from his perspective, I don't see what he has to gain except for getting a nuclear bomb on his doorstep, you know, landing in his capital.
Right. Well, It's suicide. It's suicide. But you never know. All these games being played on geopolitically, who knows? I didn't even mention Syria before. You mentioned Syria. I didn't mention Syria. Syria and Iran, you know, Iran has promised when that goes up, they're going up. Syria is the red line for Russia. Syria is the red line for China. There's another one. So who knows what North Korea is being used at or by who? Who knows?
Absolutely. And I do take Syria. I take Syria much more seriously than North Korea. Just I feel that the whole Middle East is probably much more dangerous today than it was in 2002 when we had the 9/11 attacks. The way the Al-Qaeda in Iraq has, you know, done a lot of the heavy fighting in Syria now, and they're using it as a base of operations coming back into Iraq.
Yeah, they're trying to destabilize Syria to bring down Bashar al-Assad, which is not working.
No, but...
because he's got so much support from Russia. Well, that's another thing, too. The Russians' Mediterranean fleet, they keep adding to it. They just had another drill. I just reported on another drill. There's all these massive naval and military drills going on. And, of course, if you have a military, the first thing you do with the military is you drill it. You have drills. So that's nothing new, but there's so many going on compared to the average. Every other week you got these big Iranian drills. Now you've got the big Russian drills in the Mediterranean. They keep doing it. Russians are adding another, I think it's some type of landing craft again. And you've got all this going on. I don't know where it's going. The trend is towards some type of flashpoint or conflict or something. I just don't know.
Well, I think you've said before on your show, when these guys get in trouble economically, I mean the Anglo elite, they usually do go to war. And
well, that is the English speaking world, the elite, especially if you look at the banksters, especially if you study like the Rothschilds or something, the Jewish side of the equation. When they get in trouble, the first thing they do is they go to war. They go to war. When they get into trouble any way, shape, manner, or form, war is generally a solution. They look to cause conflict. I always talked about conflict and scarcity, conflict and scarcity. You see, there's two big problems right now. One, they're hated across the planet. The banksters, running the English-speaking world, running Western civilization, are hated all across the planet. You see more and more outrage against the IMFs and so on and so forth, even from within Western civilization. I mean, you just had an Italian politician, a head judge in Italy, blame the Bilderbergers for Boston bombing. It's pretty unheard of.
Well, I got to tell you, Horace, I was talking to a kid from Italy just last week, foreign exchange student, and we were talking about Italian politics, and he was lamenting. Here's the exact words. We have no president. We have no money to do another election. and when I discussed the different candidates over there, and I talked about Super Mario, Mario Monti, the guy who just left office, he says, yes, people say he is Illuminati. You know, and that's not something you would hear from an American. But I think these Europeans are, and I said, and when he said Illuminati, I said, well, I think he's backed by the bankers. He says, yes, he is the bankers. And so, you know, those people over there are a lot more aware of who pulls the strings than the average American is.
Yeah, I think they're getting ready to turn up the heat, though. They got a couple tricks up their sleeve. But typically, going back to conflict and scarcity, what we see obviously blooming, the trend across the planet is toward some type of global conflagration, some type of big conflict. That's the only trend we see, some type of conflict. And there's another trend, though, as well, that's very pronounced in the history of Western civilization. It's a very interesting, peculiar trend. We get it on the Discovery Channel the whole time. We really don't know about it until we get Christopher Columbus coming and announcing. Typically, when the bankers are in trouble, banking-wise, they never really straighten out their house. They always just usually collapse something and or expand. Their method is usually to do both. And typically in Europe, when they got in trouble, you know, you had the flat earth meme, flat earth meme. The next thing you know, they magically found a new world. What we know in hindsight is that long before Christopher Columbus announcing he had found a new world, announcing he had found, you know, the Americas and all that kind of happy stuff, that they came back to Europe, we know that the Templars were over here looking. And we know long before that you've got the Vikings scouting it out. So you've got two different sources scouting out. Vikings, probably natural explorers. The Templars, of course, depending on who you want to listen to. The Templars got going, of course, the Templars generally thought to be property of the banksters in some way, shape, manner, form. In fact, modern European banking and Swiss banking and whatnot, you know, you're usually dealing with the Templars on some level when you're dealing with banking. It's this ancient fraternal organization that, you know, everyone argues back and forth about. But no doubt that if you watch the Discovery Channel specials, if you look at the trends, that they found North America long before Columbus. And, you know, what I'm thinking of right now to get to the point is the enemy always looks to expand when they're in trouble. They don't really have anywhere to expand to on this planet. And so that's where I think they're going with all this space meme stuff. What NASA's doing right now is capturing asteroids to mine the asteroid. Why would you mine an asteroid? Natural resources, raw materials. And that is a natural expansion. You could mine the moon. You could mine Mars. You know, think about the new Dutch East India companies sending colonies out to faraway planets to mine them. Now, how close are they to actually sending out the colonies? I don't know. I just know they're capturing asteroids getting ready to mine them, which means they may already be doing it. But it wouldn't surprise me if into this big deal they go towards some type of space meme, and God knows that's set up with the UFOs and everything else, and announce that some new Christopher Columbus announces that they found new territories to expand to. And that would save the bankers. that did. The New World saved the bankers, you know. But that's typically what they're doing. There's only two things. And the way this falls into scarcity, obviously, is you've got more scarce resources. They're always operating within the confines of a closed system. Their banking is a closed system. So the only way to really expand it is to expand territories. You got to have it in more countries. You know, there just ain't enough stuff here anymore. So they're willing to go off-world with it. That's what I think. That's what they're getting ready to do. So you got conflict and you got scarcity. There are two things they're getting ready to do. They're clearly doing something with space. It clearly involves mining asteroids and stuff. And corporations getting ready to send out stuff. Yeah, they're trying to incorporate certain things, going to space, all kinds of stuff down that particular area. NASA, all you have to do is look up NASA mining asteroids. And they're getting ready to obviously do some type of war type deal. But that's their particular deal. And usually after war, whether it be World War I, World War II, you end up with these larger international organizations, you know, League of Nations, United Nations, who knows what's coming next.
Well, and obviously conflict causes scarcity.
It can. Yes, it can. They usually involve one against the other, you know. But typically, yeah, every time, if, for instance, if you're going in the Middle East over oil, and oil is a scarce resource, and you have a dollar's reserve status, and all the oil's priced in dollars, well, you're going to have a military to defend that. If you're going into space after asteroids, and let's assume there's no one out there, you don't have a problem. If there is someone out there, and they have claim to those asteroids or those natural resources, well, then you're going to have something to defend them as well. So they're usually, if you're going into a territory, you're going to have something there to defend. Something there to defend what you consider your property, or so on and so forth. Your colonies, whatever. You know, it's interesting subject matter, but that's typically what they're doing in history. They're always expanding territory. You know, they're pulling some closed, rigged scam, like, you know, flat earth, flat earth, flat earth. Oh, we found a new world. Get the Dutch East India Company ready. We're sending out the colonists. You know, we need, next thing you know, you got all this gold flooding in Spain from South America, so on and so forth. And you know, just magically just happens that way. And the bankers, of course, have this mythological rise off these particular events. And then, of course, you've got the wars that always tend to work out well for the bankers, you know.
But you know, I recently read a book called Civilization, the Rest and the West by Niall Ferguson, who's kind of a big shot historian on the BBC and stuff. And he has this idea that I've run across in other places too, that basically China is going to be the new Rome, the new Roman Empire or whatever. And he's got all these reasons why the West became dominant, and now China's got everything going for it. I don't see it. You know, you talk about going off world, and I'm not going to rule anything out.
I'm talking about mining asteroids. They haven't announced anything off-world yet other than colonies to Mars and stuff like that. You can get a one-way ticket, but they haven't announced that we're – I just said nothing would surprise me.
Nothing would surprise me either.
They're going somewhere with this space meme, because every group you would look at, I don't care if you're talking about Steven Spielberg and the Jews, all the way over every faction, and there's many different factions right now at war. We're probably going to see them maybe even come to war, some type of internal feuds within America, which would be really interesting. I've often talked about them, you know, doing all kinds of stuff once they realize what type of trouble they're in. The problem with their playbook, Chuck, is everyone knows it. I know it. Everyone knows it. Conflict and scarcity. They're always doing the same thing. They're always expanding, and they're always causing wars. And the problem with this war, this big problem they've had in the Middle East, is, you know, everyone seems to be prepared for it. That's what's kind of interesting.
Well, and they've telegraphed the idea that China is going to be the next big, you know, place on this planet that they want to move into, or you know, some of these third world areas. And I just, you know, race is real. The Chinese have so many internal problems. I just don't see them becoming this next.
Well, the Chinese have two sides. If you listen to Bob Whitaker or anyone that's worked around a lot of them, back in the heydays of communism, they have a nationalist side and they have a communist side. Now, the communist side, the globalist side, they work with the Zionists and the Jews and all these other groups, and they're feeding at the New World Order table. So it's often been speculated that they want to collapse China and roll it into the New World Order, and the nationalist side, of course, wants China. They want China, but, you know, China has a public central bank, which is pretty rare on this planet. But at the same time, you know, many times our enemy, and historically, they announce this rising superpower, the so-called non-white rising superpowers, and guess what happens? It doesn't really rise that much.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really rise that much, or it hits a top. The problem in general is what they hit with in Japan, in particular Japan specifically. Japan wasn't interested in running the planet. China might not be interested. Nationalist China certainly isn't interested in running the planet. The globalist side may be another story, but they're nowhere near equipped. The only country equipped to even attempt to go for a New World Order right now would be America. The problem is, they need some help. The problem is they can't really do it with being opposed by elements in, well, being opposed by elements in China would probably no big deal, but if they're backed by the Russians, it is. You know, that's
yeah.
The problem.
Now, when you talk about those two sides in China, I don't know who's dominant there, but what would be the benefit of having something like the one-child policy in China? I mean, isn't that demographic suicide?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you want to talk about scarcity. How about a scarcity of children? So, you know, you want to talk about ultimate scarcity, scarcity of genetics. I mean, the one-China policy is causing demographic problems, not just as far as not enough young people to replace those that are passing away, but you're having, you know, a lot of abortions of the females, and so you got a excess of males, which I don't know how you deal with that aside from having a big war. You know, homosexuality problems. Obviously, there's lots of social problems that are associated with having very few children being born, especially female children in China. What side would benefit from that? The nationalist side or the communist side? Or what would, why,
you know,
would they do
all,
that?
There's a great deal of eugenics going on in China, and I don't know what the Chinese plan on doing either side. You know, you get the feeling when you look at China's eugenics and you look at the role certain elements have played, let's say post Kissinger going over there and opening up China, I always get the feeling that they're breeding up one China, and the other China they just want gone.
Right.
Because the one-child policy is going to end up with probably some type of population collapse at a certain point in time, which is probably going to happen all across the world. That's what Bob Whitaker thinks, that there's going to be a population collapse around the world. We think of this ever-expanding population. Well, the big story 50 years from now, he says, will be a total population collapse. Now, on one side of China, you have these advanced eugenics programs. I mean, some of the most advanced on the planet that they're writing about. Who knows what's going on in Western civilization? They don't write about it. The reason I like about the Asians is they always tell us what they're doing. They always brag about it. Our guys don't. We don't know anything until it happens and they announce it. But you can rest assured they're doing stuff behind the scenes. But the Chinese are doing all kinds of advanced studies on East Asian genetics as well as Indo-European genetics.
Well, and you gotta think that not everybody is following the one China policy. Anytime you have a public policy like that, you can bet there's some elites that are having, you know, 8 kids.
Oh, sure. Well, I don't know about 8. I don't know any elites having 8 kids. There are elites probably having more than 1 kid then, they pay the fine and whatnot. But it's pretty, there's a lot of peer pressure in this society. But there's a lot of eugenics. There's a lot of really advanced eugenics they're doing. I just always get the feeling that, you know, okay, 90% of China is probably going to die one morning, and the only thing they're worried about is that 10% or whatever that they plan on breeding up to something else. You know, that's the feeling I have, but I don't really have anything other than gut instincts.
Well, when I saw it, and this is going back 10 years ago, but they sent over a 7-foot, you know, Chinese basketball player like Wang Zizi. And, you know, that's not your typical Chinaman. And then I would read up in some of the magazines, Wired Magazine and stuff, and they don't have any of the restrictions on genetic research or genetic
engineering. None at all. That's why there's so many partnerships over there. There's no genetic. Here, everything's underneath the table and everything else. There's no restriction at all. You know, they take the attitude, why wouldn't we want to have better looking and smarter Chinese in Western civilization? That'd be thought Nazism. Of course, the problem is that you can't have one group outwardly doing that. For very long before they make big inroads and you know, in my opinion, what they're doing is some type of test run of a program that is potentially global in nature. I know it sounds rather ridiculous, but that's my feeling, is that this is one of these globalist type plans, and that the Chinese are just basically guinea pigs for it, and at the same time doing quite well underneath it, you know. Outward eugenics that in America at one time was pretty open as well, prior to Nazi Germany. But we'll have to see. They've got a pretty brutal eugenics program, that's for sure.
Yeah, they definitely don't have any qualms about killing people. And I was talking to a fellow who used to work for the State Department over there, and if they're running one of their convoys through a Chinese city or something, the Chinese said they had no problem if, you know, the traffic's terrible over there. If they kill a pedestrian or something, that's no problem. Just let them know about it so they can pay off the family a little bit. But they don't have any of the sentimentality about human life that we have.
No, they don't, nor toward animals.
Yeah.
They don't see the universe the same way, no doubt about that. My feeling is that the New World Order of old, the mixed, you know, there's a whole segment, the mixed Asian, African, and European New World Order of old, this Mocha man, has probably turned into some type of Eurasian man. That's my feeling. But they're always cooking up some new globalist scheme, some way to rule the world indefinitely, you know. And who's to say what the flavor of the week is? But the Chinese have an element that most certainly is involved, and they got an element that's at pretty much any given day in civil war with them. So
I get the feeling sometimes that the Anglo elite is scouting around the planet to find out what kind of people would make the best peasants. And, you know, they look down at Mexico and they're like, you know, these Mexicans, they're willing to tolerate corruption. They're willing to live in poverty. These guys would be great. And then they bring them over here and they find out there's a downside to having a city full of Mexicans. There's some serious downsides.
The Western civilization is full of people and, full of people at the top that are very uncomfortable with their own populations. Now, at the American Renaissance and stuff like that, I've seen some articles quite brilliant about that they just don't want competition from other whites. And I think that's part of it in some cases. I just think it's also just, somewhat a grab for power and somewhat, I think it's somewhat an old agenda, to be honest with you. I always get the feeling that's very old. And researching white genocide, one thing that I came over and over again, people always ask me, Horace, why do you talk about certain topics over and over again? Why do you go down this angle? And I always say, well, in researching white genocide, I come across something over and over again. Back in the League of Nations, you have this character, I call him Codenhove Kalergi. The Europeans are starting to write about him quite a bit. He is basically one of the first to outwardly talk about white genocide in a legal way. You know, we're going to, in the League of Nations, he gave this big speech coming into the League of Nations and whatnot, purporting this policy that they wanted to create a, pardon me, a blended humanity in Europe, and this mixed race European, the new European would be mixed race, part African, part Asian, and part European. And he's talking about doing this in Europe, of course, and only Europe.
Right.
This is where, now it's not illegal to declare, you know, in the League of Nations, you know, the Genocide Convention, none of that happened. So it's not illegal to talk about something like that or anything else. It was very outward. You can look it up. I actually talked about one of the articles in In-Game Exotica quite extensively. But I'm always asked, why do you go over certain topics? Well, one thing that Kalergi, and this Codenhove Kalergi, he's a European aristocrat, He has part Japanese. He's married to a Jewish woman, very friends with the Zionists of Zionists at the time, which was Herzl. He's friends with, it's a who's who at the top of Western civilization that he's friends with. And one thing that he makes clear in his plan that we want to do, we want this mixed race again, this perfect mixed race, and he harkens back to ancient Egypt. And I always thought that was kind of interesting because it sounds very old then, right?
Yeah.
It sounds very old. It sounds like a very old plan. And so that's when I started doing all the research. People always ask, why do you keep talking about Akhenaten? Why do I keep talking about King Tut? I don't know the truth behind the characters. I have questions, not answers. But I know if you got these guys planning my genocide, they keep talking about this perfect mixed race of ancient Egypt. I'm going to look back because I assumed at one time Egypt was all white, and I know what it is now.
Right.
I assumed that sometimes something happened, and I kept on coming across one dynasty over and over again. The Hyksos and Akhenaten, and the bringing in of African slaves, and the throwing out of Akhenaten, and Akhenaten comes back, and the artwork under Akhenaten. If you look at the art under Akhenaten, the Armana art, you see the blended humanity. And that's, of course, ended up what happening. After they got back in power so many years after Akhenaten's death, they got back in power. Next thing you know, Egypt is what it is now. You know what I mean? So I think it's interesting. That's where it all comes back to. That's where I got into these subjects. But it all comes down to something quite that occurred to me that this is quite old because all these guys around him keeps talking over and over again about this mixed race of ancient Egypt. I'm like, okay, what are they talking about? You know, and I came to believe that they're very serious in their intentions.
You know, I wonder from
this is part of some type of globalist plan going quite a ways back. It has to do, I believe, with control, because obviously a mixed race population is not going to be able to overthrow an elite like a homogenous population. I think that's part of it. I also think there's more to it than we know about. You know, just hatred for our race, sure. Agreed, sure. There's all these different conversations we could get into, but it is quite old. The references they make are old, at least. You know,
when they talk about a perfect mixed race back in Egypt, you know, obviously Egypt is not really a powerhouse today, and something must have gone wrong in their mythology. What do they figure went wrong there? I mean, why did their perfect mixed race in Egypt fail, or how did it?
Well, they never say that. The only thing we know, well, we don't really know who they're referring to. It's kind of like the Exodus and Moses and the Israelites. We're left guessing, you know, okay, when did this group leave Egypt? You see, there's all kinds of clues. There can only be one thing. There's only one monotheistic Egyptian, that's Akhenaten. There's only one potential Moses candidate, Akhenaten. There's only one particular kid being promoted night and day. And he's definitely part Indo-European. I don't disagree with that. So is Obama.
Right.
But that's King Tut. You see, there's only one thing being promoted by right in front of our face. Why is this information being produced? What are we being set up? Right now, post September 11th, besides going toward war, our enemy has been busy. The who's who financing the largest museum ever to be built on planet Earth, the largest structure on the Giza Plateau, besides the pyramids, is this museum to King Tut. Now, King Tut, of course, for the listeners, is the son of Akhenaten, and not Nefertiti, but Akhenaten's sister. And so it becomes a question, why are they doing this? I mean, these people, my friends, the people at the top of the Western world, Jew, Gentile-like, I, in fact, in my opinion, they're all, I'm always asked about this, because I talk about banksters and elitesters. There's so many different factions of them, and they may all agree on the same basic tenets. But they're at war in any given day, kind of like mafia families. You know, Tony Soprano sits down with his buddy, and the next thing you know, sits down with the other families in New Jersey. Next thing you know, they're at war, and it's that type of thing. But when it comes down to this one, you're always trying to figure out why they're doing this type of stuff. What's the ultimate motivation? What they say is they're trying to recreate what they had in some type of Egyptian type deal. That's what it always comes back to, for better or worse. The problem is the ones that say it, the ones that are really into this type of stuff, all end up being, you know, the more dangerous elements all look just like us, for whatever reason. You know.
Now,
I'm always said, you know, Horace, you talk about Jews and Gentiles, or like you've just been saying, the Anglo elite. What I tell them is, look, I believe that the mythology is alive. The Israelites and Moses. Moses does not answer to the Israelites. The Israelites answer to Moses. That is the structure. And if you get out of line, according to their books, Yahweh comes in and skins you alive, impales you, and everything else. So Moses is ultimately the arbitrator here. And what I believe is that our enemy's mythology is alive. I believe there is a Moses in the mix that we've been looking over. White nationalists most certainly look over it. He's not wearing a yarmulke. He's a Jewish supremacist of Jewish supremacists. After all, if there was original Jewish supremacists, it would be Moses. Read the books. And he's there. And they've used these stories. His book is the Talmud. He's waging war by deception. They're basically there. They're in front of us the whole time. We just refuse. They look like us, so we just assume they're us. There's a problem at the top, and the problem is a little bit deeper than Abe Foxy Foxman, although he is a huge problem too. That's my opinion on the subject. The mythology is alive, basically. It's alive in front of our face.
They're trying to
recreate what they had in this time period, this failed time period of Amarna, this failed time period that they went on to become successful under the quote unquote Shepherd Kings. Because it, for those that listen, the Hyksos were kicked out and they went and occupied a place you know today called Palestine.
Right.
Yeah. It's just all a coincidence though. It's just all a coincidence. But that's what I've always traced it back to. That's the only rational explanation. They're motivated by their mythology. Whether it's true or not is irrelevant. They're motivated by it to some extent. I've seen no evidence that anyone at the top of Western civilization is related to King Tut. There's no doubt that whole segments of Western civilization would be related to King Tut if he was Indo-European. Of course, we just don't know any other thing about him other than some very strange facts that are off subject matter. For this particular podcast, but we know some very strange things about him and his sister genetically.
Right. Well, there's a lot of different rabbit trails we could chase off subject.
Exactly. And all over the place though. But this is the reason, in my opinion, why you're in Egypt, why we're in the Middle East now, besides Israel. Israel's one reason. They're still sitting in the same area, Palestine, and you're also in Egypt, and you're in Babylon and Persia and all these other areas. But it's most certainly they're all, Egypt is always on the discussion, so is Saudi Arabia. It's always the same stuff.
Now, when we look forward, because I talk all day, and the internet has given people the ability to access all kinds of information that they're not getting in the mainstream. So there's an amazing amount of people who are aware of some of these facts that I just learned by listening to your podcast. And so I hear them talking about some of the same things here, but a lot of it is a fear-based mindset. The Bilderbergers control everything, there's nothing we can do, so on and so forth. Obviously, Putin is still there, and Putin is a guy who's a nationalist, or at least he's not on the same side as the Anglo elite. Is it because the Anglo elite is infighting that he's able to stand against
them? Well, there's some elements of the English-speaking world. When you say Anglo elite, you're talking about Anglo-American elite. Some elements are on the same side as Putin. I'm guessing in America we have a civil war brewing underneath the scenes and behind the CIA, behind the FBI, behind the NSA. We have a civil war brewing. We have a civil war brewing, and it most certainly it came to head. You see elements of it with the nomination of Chuck Hagel. You see elements of it with the upset over Brzezinski and some of his statements toward Israel. We have a civil war, and Putin is a Russian nationalist. Under foreign policy, there can be no dispute. Internal to Russia, he plays all these games. He plays the multicultural game. He does all kinds of stuff, especially post-2008. Prior to 2008, he's mostly letting skinheads, or actually, as long as you don't get caught, let skinheads run around and do whatever they want to do. I still remember the senator from, I want to say it was South Carolina or North Carolina. John Edwards, Senator John Edwards, wrote a piece for the CFR that Putin knows exactly what he's doing, that he was really just playing a game with them. It was like a 40-page piece about how he's really in support of the skinheads and all kinds of interesting speculation about Putin. Putin is a fascinating character. I just know that, our enemy hates him. Our enemy's totally afraid of what he's doing. He's out for Russia. He's out to preserve Russia and Russian people, Russian customs.
Okay. I agree with that, and I follow you there. But, recently we had the big gun debate here in the United States, and I read or maybe heard on your show that Putin said he told Americans, hang on to your guns, talking to the American.
I don't know they say that. Russia today plays a lot of games. They're a major, major propaganda outlet that happens to be right on a lot of subjects on any given day. And they're one of the interesting new players on the news, and more and more white America are listening to them, as well as a lot of other people. And they were talking about gun laws are insane in America and everything else. So it really depends. Putin's all over the map. You know, what I was trying to get to before is he's a Russian nationalist who of late has defined Russian nationalists as anyone, you know, across the Russian territories. But no one really believes he believes that.
Right.
You know. So I don't know. I don't know what these guys are preparing to do other than on one side of the equation, you've got these crazy globalists who appear to have an agenda. According to them, if you go back into what they say, that goes back to Egypt. Whatever that means, I don't know. I can track it back. We can talk about it. I have questions. I don't have answers other than they're trying to kill us, and they say they're trying to create this perfect race of going back to Egypt. It appears like they're sincere about it. I mean, in America, we've got, you know, we've got the Mississippi River, and you've got Memphis, and you've got the Egyptian names and so on and so forth, etc. And they're very much big into that. On the other hand of the equation, you got the guys like Putin who are interested. What they say is they're not interested in a unipolar world. That's the big thing. Have a new world order without that. No way.
You know, when I look, and I agree with you. I mean, historically, there's been a fascination with Egypt in particular, and you know, all kinds
coming from the English-speaking world, coming from London, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. I mean, the Masonic stuff, everything.
In fact, let me tickle the audience taste buds for something that I talk about. You see, one of the big mysteries here is that the Nefertiti equation. Everyone knows Nefertiti. Everyone. I'm guessing most listeners believe she's most likely a white woman. But Nefertiti, you see, if you go back to Hitler, Nefertiti's bust is sitting in a German museum, and the Germans will not return it to Egypt. They will not, their statement, they won't let it travel. Nefertiti doesn't travel. This lady doesn't travel, is the German quotes. And this goes back to Hitler. The question when it comes down to this period, this Marmara period, and how significant it is to our race, the question isn't who knows what, it's just when do they know it, and why don't we know the whole story? That's
right.
The question, because there's a huge fight over the bust of Nefertiti, and the Germans won't let it leave. It's all a fascinating subject matter. And Tut is not the son of Nefertiti. That is big news, because everyone thought he was. So it's all this interesting drama that we just don't have the whole story on, but it has everything to do with our race, it has everything to do with what's going on now. It has everything to do with this, you know, this pie in the sky New World Order stuff. But they don't have a New World Order. That's the problem. They have too many resistance within their own camp. There's too much resistance from the Putins and the elements within China, elements within Japan, elements within Germany that generally sit quiet with their hands folded behind the scene. There's elements all over the place, even within America, even within the UK, elements at the very high level that aren't interested in their stinking plan. Just like you talked in the earlier about the Italian, the young Italian, who knew very well that the banksters were running a scam on Italy, like they were running one, like they ran one on Greece big time, like they're getting ready to run another Spain, even worse in Spain potentially. It's just all a scam. The whole thing's coming unglued is what I feel like. The question is, what are they going to do to stop it from becoming unglued? And this goes back to conflict and scarcity. Typically, they go to war. It's kind of obvious that someone's planning something, but this time, I think someone might have their number. We may have surprises on our doorstep. I just don't know what all they'd be. But my job is simply to put out a consistent message that is blaring out there, you know, about white genocide. That's what I concluded long ago, that there's a plan. This plan is old. It has to do with us being in this big New World Order guinea pig. You know, the white rabbit is the New World Order guinea pig, I always say. And it's, you know, it can go a handful of different ways. They're always cooking up some scheme, you know. And it goes in some very strange places. There's no doubt about that. But frankly, it does. It does based on what they say. You know?
Well, you know, Horace, this is your show, and I have a slightly different perspective on some matters than you do.
Of course.
One
would hope. You're white.
Right, right. Well, you know, I'm pretty religious, and you know, there's some times you'll say things that might offend some Christians or something.
Sure.
But overall, I'm fascinated by everything you say, especially going back to the Sumerian texts and the different, you know, origins of these names of different gods and everything like that.
Let me clarify something for many Christians, because we have certain Christians that don't know. I believe that when you're looking at the modern Old Testament, what I believe is what I believe is pretty much proven is that when they're talking, when the powers that be, let's say the modern day Israelites, are talking about Moses, whatever, they're using stories to tell their stories. It's kind of like a Benjamin Franklin. When he came to America, he said he's Moses leading the Israelites. Well, he's not really Moses, and he's not leading the Israelites, per se. He's just using this story. I think that's going on a great deal when they were writing the Old Testament as well. Whatever happened in Egypt, whatever happened, they're using stories to tell their stories, whether it be the flood epic or whatever. And so, right, I don't necessarily believe that you're dealing with the Moses. You're dealing with their Moses.
Right, right. That story is kind of a template.
Sure.
And I've heard you address that before. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have.
I'm not quite certain that we're dealing with the real deal, because I know there are various different types of Christians that don't believe that they're the real Israelites and don't believe that they're dealing with the real Moses, and I would tend to agree with that, that we're dealing with someone using stories to tell their own stories on some level. And this goes back to, you mentioned Sumer, and that the real Moses would probably go back into that Sumer-type setting, which, of course, you're dealing with the same area. You're dealing with the Middle East.
Right, and I'm totally over my head. So I just listen. When I hear you talking about that stuff, I just listen.
Well, I'm over my head, too. I just know what I need to know to get through it. I know, there's a connect the dots to white genocide, and the connect the dots will take you to Egypt every time because it's what they tell you.
Well, and
that's the problem.
Here's what other people who might be Christians or listen to your podcast. One of the things that fascinated me the most and really clicked in my worldview with what you said, and this was going back, I think it was one of the Follow White Rabbits way back when, and it may have sounded a little condescending to some of the Christians there, but you said, remember, Christians, you can't fight. You've got to use sound or something like that. And all the things you talk about the way sound works, it reminds me, on the front of the cover of my little Bible cover, it has a quote from John 1:1. It says, and the Word was God, or God was the Word, and the Word was God. And as far as a spiritual level, I mean, you're absolutely 100% right and consistent with my worldview that, words are just have insane power. They have a spiritual power. No matter what your beliefs are, religious, whatever, if you actually look at how the world changes, it's not with bullets. It's with ideas. It's with memes. It's with mythology. It's, these guys fascinate for centuries over, the origins of their people, and they build their mythology, and then you have this competing mythology. And, I don't gather that you're especially the religious person, but everything that you said, it clicks with me, even though I have a slightly different point of view, it makes sense. I mean, everything is so, I hate to use the word spiritual, but it's so magical.
Well, I wouldn't, I don't remember ever saying Christians shouldn't fight. I think everyone, Christian, non-Christian, all the listeners, every animal has a right to self-defense. It's like a divine, it's a right that can't be given or can't be taken unless you just choose not to exercise it. Our self-defense, because it's the only way we can win, I've never seen violence change this type of system. It come down to looking at what Bob was saying, Bob Whitaker, who knows a great deal about the Soviet Union, how it fell, and the template holds that sound is vibration, and the vibrations can be quite destructive. They're just not illegal. It's not illegal to put your terminology in, especially if you're dealing with a higher truth. I mean, we sit in ceaseless prayer. There's little bugsers out there over WhitakerOnline.org on the swarm. They sit in ceaseless prayer, but their prayer is the mantra.
Right.
They believe that'll help.
And a mantra is a prayer. I mean,
that's correct.
Even from a completely secular point of view,
you never know who you may be calling down here to help you.
Exactly. No, right.
You don't
exactly
know.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, if there was any genocide on this planet, white Christians would be lining up to fight it. I'm just saying that we have one of our own that has to be fought effectively as well. And the only way I know of to fight it and defeat it is, with sound, with a pressure wave. And, from where this podcast first started, I remember, like, yesterday, our first time we talked with Lord Nelson. You remember that?
Yeah.
The listeners can go down and listen to it, the first interview with Chuck Roy, to where we are now. If you look at what we were talking about then and where our message is now, and that's not very long period of time, really, it's been pretty outrageous, the growth.
Well, and I've been humbled because I can, I was on board, but I really did not have faith that it would work like this, and it did. And it's amazing. You know, I look at the videos that have come out now and the way this stuff's just taking off and spreading all over the net, even reaching into mainstream media, and I don't want to be cocky, but it almost seems like it's unstoppable at this point.
Well, that's how it works. It's like the word racist. It almost seems like mythological success of our enemies. It's not. It's the basics. The basics will make you look like a superhero if you exercise them correctly. You know, I'm just a rabbit. I don't, you know, a lot of guys always think their first impression is I make these videos and stuff like that. The fact of the matter is I've only made a couple videos. They're animations, actually, and one is just now coming out finally. But a lot of these videos, like Johnny White Rabbit, I don't know what motivates that guy, but his newest tune is some of the catchiest stuff I've ever heard. It's that stuff that you just can't get out of your brain. You know, I don't know if you've heard his latest tune. It's some wild stuff.
I love every one of them that comes out.
Well, Johnny White Rabbit writes all kinds of stuff, but he does these little pop things like the anthem, anti-racist, code word for anti-white. I'm guessing a lot of listeners heard that. He did another one called Anti-White's Gotta Go. It's only a minute and a half long, you know, and, there we go.
There it is.
You guys can hear it for a second. I mean, it's a pop tune, you know? I mean, like, what motivates this guy? I don't know.
Well, I think it goes back to what you were saying very early on, that, you know, that it's the way sound works. When you're on the right frequency, all of a sudden you see everybody who's cooperating with you because they're on the same frequency that you are.
Sure.
And you know, in my own life, I've had these experiences that have just been amazing. There's a guy who comes into my workplace every once in a while. This guy's 88 years old. And he was basically has a very similar background to Bob Whitaker. Incredibly high IQ, worked in the same sort of stuff. So this guy, I mean, he's 88 years old, and the guy's life is absolutely amazing. And I'm not talking about just what he's done in the past. What he actually does today, he uses tactics, the same sort of stuff that Whitaker would have used in the Soviet Union, that this guy was probably involved in as well. And he uses it on our own society. He goes into schools, and he's a real religious fellow. He prays with children in schools, which is illegal. He gets away with it because he's a World War II veteran. He goes in with the VFW and stuff. This guy is absolutely amazing. And, I mean, I could go on for half an hour about things that he's done in the last 5 or 10 years that are seem impossible, you know, because I do get demoralized like a lot of other people do. But, you know, the point is, the reason why I get to talk to this guy and he inspires me now and then is because I was on the same frequency with him when he first walked into my business and we first started talking. And it's not just him. It's half a dozen different people, some of them way ahead of me. As you've pointed out, Horace, there's always people way ahead of you. Some that are ways behind me. But you're united by a common concern, a common message, a concern about white genocide. And it seems so simple. I mean, for a couple of years after I first heard Whitaker talk about talking points and use the mantra, I puzzled over the mantra because it was so simple. I said, why am I not getting this? What's the purpose of it? What's the power of it? It's just a paragraph. It's 222 words or whatever. You know, how is this going to change anything? And in the last few years, I've been absolutely humbled by them.
Well, it's not the sound, it's the vibration. And, sound is what we hear. Vibration is what we feel. If you ever hear a particular a musical piece, maybe it's Bach, maybe you're at Christmas time and you hear a song you heard when you were little, like, Oh Holy Night, all of a sudden you have this big flashback. You remember exactly where you're sitting in the church pew with your grandma and grandpa or whatever. It's the vibration. It's the vibration. The vibration is what is very, it's what you feel. It's what is what drives you crazy or what annoys you about something. But yes, you know, different things attract different rabbits, as I say. And it's, in fact, the latest piece I played for a bit by Johnny White Rabbit was actually by Johnny White Rabbit and Patrick White Rabbit. These two are now hooked up. Now, who are they? I have no frigging idea. The goal of the first time we talked was to have so much going on that I don't even know what's going on or who they are.
Well, that's the beauty
of... You know, lots going on, you know.
That's the beauty of being on this team, is that you are replaceable. You know, I look at when we first started talking with Lord Nelson. Lord Nelson's the one who really started getting me going on the mantra. And I played a tiny little role there, and everybody's played their role, but everybody's replaceable at this point, and it's out of our hands. You know, Johnny White Rabbit, love his stuff, but I don't think he's even the guy who made that video with the gals in white tank tops.
No, that's someone else entirely.
Right, and that
someone
thing
else
is,
entirely. This is
on.
The whole thing. I mean, you know, I always told you we're looking to inspire those that are going to go on and inspire those. Go on to teach those that are going on to teach those. We're looking to have a big impact. You know, typically in a dissident type struggle, we're the antithesis of that. You have one dissident, he writes books, he's against the system, he rises, he becomes a hero. We're the antithesis of that. We are several groups of dissidents who believe they're just united by a consistent message, united because we see it working. Anymore, it's kind of unarguable that it's had an impact. You have to be on message, have to have a message. The message has to be workable by everyone everywhere, you know, that type of thing. But we're united by almost the direct opposite. It's not just one guy just shouting, you know, give us, you know, what for whatever reason. It's a whole host of different characters that are allowed to participate underneath your terms, whether they use a real name like you or Patrick and Johnny White Rabbit, whoever the hell they are.
Right.
You know? It's funny stuff. It's funny stuff. Yeah, Johnny Mantra Seed is who you're talking about, the Stop White Genocide that made, you know, E! Online. And it's nice to have these guys out there doing stuff because that makes it easier for someone like me to continue just, well, if I have to take, if I have to sit back and work on something big, I can sit back and work on something big, you know, or so on and so forth, et cetera. And that's the whole idea of having a broad team. You know, if Chuck Roy has to take a break and have, you know, five more kids over the next so many months.
Well, you know, I'm just
well,
more...
that's fine. Chuck Roy can take a break because we have what? Bob thinks we have 100. We probably have 300 or 400 posting, but most of them aren't reporting. I don't really blame. I didn't report any time I posted way back in the day anyway, so.
Well, you know, Horace, I remember we were having a conversation probably a year or so ago, and off the air, and one of the most heartening things I've ever heard in my life is when you said, you know, Truck Roy, you're part of the team, and I love being part of a team because a team can go on without you. You know, even if something happens to you, you know, eventually we all die eventually or whatever. You know, your element of your struggle doesn't die with you. It carries on. It's a sense of immortality, you know, when you feel like everything that you commit your life to, you know, fighting against a horror like white genocide, that struggle is not going to die with you. I can't imagine the feelings that a guy like Dr. Pierce must have had when he saw, you know, his own death coming in and his organization died with him pretty much. And you know, Whitaker has pointed out, he's talked about Dr. Pierce and said, I don't want that to happen. And, you know, our success is a success for Whitaker because it means that he's an old guy. When he passes on, everything that he's taught us will continue on.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt about that. You know, he's got about 4,000 articles, 4,000 plus articles. We're talking about redoing the website after, we've got it all backed up, so it would be hardly the point, but we're talking about redoing some things there after the next animation. But, you know, when you have a broad group like this, it allows the Johnny White Rabbits and the Patrick White Rabbits to do their own thing. If they want to do little pop ditties, I don't care as long as it works. I'm not really thick-headed. We've got all kinds of different characters wanting to do various different things. We've got another character, Linux Lewis, that does his own animations and is helping us on other things. We got you doing your own thing, and there's Lord Nelson out there doing his own thing. But at the same time, they're all in the same message. So you have different strengths and different weaknesses, and it lends to the strength of a white group particularly instead of its weaknesses.
Right, because we are so cantankerous, and we all have our different opinions. And
plus, they're individualistic. They want to do their own thing. These guys are doing their own things under a consistent message, which is great.
Right, yeah, and I mean, creativity. I mean, you look at, like, some of those Johnny White Rabbit videos and the tunes. It blows my mind. That makes me proud to be, you know, somewhat associated with people who are on the same team that have that level of creativity and intelligence and everything. And, you know, I think when you start winning, it attracts more winners, and it kind of snowballs, and I've just been really pleased and kind of blown away by how this whole thing's taken off. And, you know, I remember a couple podcasts ago on your paid podcast, which, you know, anyone, I don't mind paying for the paid podcast. You know, you're going to spend money on beer or coffee at the diner or whatever, spend money to support, you know, something worthwhile. So I don't mind paying for your podcast. And I was remembering a couple podcasts ago, you were talking about a couple people who were a little bit negative or saying this won't work, which, you know, of course, we've heard since the beginning. And at this point, you have to really not want something to work to be blind to the level of success that the Montrose had.
Yeah, what happens is we get new subscribers to In-Game Exotica, which is fine, but they never listen to Follow the White Rabbit, which is kind of backwards. If you don't like Follow the White Rabbit, you're not going to like In-Game Exotica. But they don't listen to the free stuff, which they're more than welcome to. I don't tell people what to do, obviously, but I'm never one to appeal to people to be on Messenger, to get on Messenger, to support a website. We look to track them, and I think one of the best things to do is, if you have big websites, is look to sell some type of electronic media or goods or whatever, and raise money without having to ask. You know, I always feel bad for Stormfront. They're out there begging, and these different other groups have to beg, which is what it amounts to, you know, send us money. I don't do that. I don't ever appeal to anybody. We only look to attract those that want to operate, whether through the action of a consistent message or whatever. But that's the whole agenda. That's the whole objective. But yeah, there are always those that are going to doubt. But that's just typical. I mean, there could be a torchlight parade go right past them, and they'll still doubt it.
Right. Well, and you know, I think that the imagination and creativity of your podcast, you know, talking about a lot of stuff, you know, speculative stuff about ancient history
it's high octane speculation, but it's a speculation that people are turning into. People aren't, you know, the major news is not really reporting the news, and they're not doing any of the speculation people want off of facts. For instance, the speculation that I gave you about white genocide, Code and Hope Clarity, and about the Egypt connection, is speculation based on a fact that he said it.
right. And, I mean, there's documented stuff that is just so amazing, it'll blow your mind. And you cover a lot of that stuff on your show. And I think that frequency, that level that you're appealing to people on, that vibe, brings in people who are creative. It brings in people who want to win.
Certainly our research was that these are the topics that they want to hear about, the people that are most likely to actually fight the system. We're talking about fight it with our particular method are most likely, this is what they want to hear, and they're hearing it, but they're not hearing it from any type of racial perspective. And it all has everything to do with white genocide, in my opinion. I'm just not sure how it's all going to shape up.
Well, you gotta think, if the guys who are pushing white genocide fascinate over this stuff, there's something there.
Sure, there's gotta be. Well, no doubt about it. It's gotta mean something. It may be fairy tales, but these fairy tales mean something to them. What template it actually has for ancient Israel to now, you know, so on and so forth, et cetera. I don't know how it all work out. But of course, that's the conversation. It's a conversation people want to have.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I'm going to keep listening for the foreseeable future, and I look forward to every one of your podcasts to come out.
Sure, and stay tuned because we got big stuff shaking.
All right,
we got big stuff shaking. But this is another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. This is with Truck Roy. These will be coming out probably every few weeks at the minimum. We'll be back with you with another one right after the animation. The animation is due out. I'd say it's about 98% done as of this recording. This recording is Wednesday, April 17th, 2013, so we're about 98% done. The sound is completely prepped, ready to go. So you guys keep your eyes out for Mein Fur.
Looking forward to the long-awaited animation.
Yes, this is long-awaited. And these things are a lot more to do than you could ever imagine. Especially if you're doing stuff activist style, which means no one's getting paid. That's one of the challenges with doing anything. Getting rabbits to do stuff without getting paid is not easy. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to put this stuff together. It's very, very difficult. This last one's been very, very trying. But it'll be worth it in the end. But this is WhiteRabbitRadio.net. You're listening to Horace the Vengeance, Follow the White Rabbit with Truck Roy here. And we'll be back with you sometime in the very near future.
Latch. Savage Radio.